Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining me right now, the host of a podcast on The Ringer, which I listened to sporadically, though they drove me nuts a couple of weeks ago, and that's Robert Mays. Robert, Evan Roberts here in New York. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Can I tell you why you drove me nuts? Can I tell you why?
You absolutely can.
Now, I think you've been negative to the Giants, and a lot of it fairly, because the Giants have been incompetent, all right? So we're in agreement on that, right? All good. I didn't like, and I think it was you, Mays. I don't think it was your partner. I think it was you made this comment, quote, and it was this comment ticked me off so much. I was talking about it on the air, on the midday show. I said, this Ringer guy said this, that the Giants got nothing for Odell Beckham Jr. Now, Robert, come on now. You don't really believe that, right?
Oh, I don't think I would have said that. And if I did, there was probably some outside context to it. I mean, they certainly did in a vacuum. I mean, in a vacuum, you get the 17th overall pick. You assume that you're going to be able to get at least a quality starter out of that. And then it's whatever you feel about Jabril Peppers. I think he's a fine player. I think that he's, I don't know, maybe average is too strong. But he has not shown to be that impactful with defensive players so far in his career. I think my problem is more so with what they got out of that pick after trading it for Odell Beckham. And that's the issue, right? I mean, when you make these deals, they look so good on paper at times because, oh, you get this pick and that pick, and you really think about just the nebulous idea of what you can make your team into. I think the Raiders were in a similar boat. It's like, oh, three first-round picks, let's do this. And then you see what comes out of it, and you're like, man, would you rather have that than Khalil Mack, honestly? And that's kind of how I feel about the Beckham deal. It's like, all right, we trade maybe the most dynamic pass-catching presence in the entire NFL, at least arguably. And your return from that is a decent safety and a 340-pound defensive tackle who's never going to rush the passer. That's what's depressing to me if I'm a Giants fan.
And see, that's the funny thing. See, that part I agree with you on. And I think in general, when we talk about these trades and we talk about getting draft picks back, I think we always overvalue the draft picks because then you got to turn it into something and you have to ask yourself, and you just didn't, I think it's fair, what are you turning that pick into? Is that going to be as valuable as Odell Beckham? But in comparison to what you get for trades, what you get for Antonio Brown, and I know it's a different situation, but nevertheless, it's a far cry from what they got for Odell. So I didn't love trading Odell Beckham. I agree with you. I just think that in the context of what you usually get when you trade players away, they did get a lot back.
I think it was a fine return. But then you look at what happened with Frank Clark last week, and it's a first and a second from Kansas City. I feel like Antonio Brown is the one that's kind of skewed this.
Right.
Because for the most part, all of the guys that were traded away that are borderline superstar players got a higher return than Antonio Brown. Even a guy like Dee Ford, who there's a reason Kansas City wanted to get rid of him. There's a reason they wanted to replace him with Frank Clark. He's still got a second for him. So I think Antonio Brown has kind of shifted maybe the understanding we have of value for superstar players. But if you look at the other guys that have been dealt as of late, it's a lot of firsts. It's a lot of firsts and change. So, yeah, I think what they got for Odell is pretty much what teams are getting for really, really good players. And I just think that the return for those really good players has not stacked up to what those players give you, at least in the last calendar year or so.
If Dexter Lawrence, the defensive tackle out of Clemson, becomes Snacks Harrison, right? Former Giant, they traded him away last year to Detroit. If that's his NFL career, do you think they made a good decision at 17?
In the context of their franchise, no. Because, first of all, they got rid of Snacks Harrison. If the guy that you draft with the pick you traded for Odell Beckham has the ceiling of a player you already had on your roster and got rid of, I just think that is a circular plan. You're just chasing your tail. And I also think that in the NFL right now, even if he becomes Snacks Harrison, which that is saying he's becoming the best run defending defensive tackle in the NFL.
Right, I'm saying a lot by saying that. I admit that. Yes, yes.
If he becomes that, then I still have trouble with that as a maybe top half of the first round pick. It's the same thing as running backs. It's just what this franchise has shown and what Gettleman has shown with his understanding of positional value as it currently exists. I mean, drafting a run-stuffing defensive tackle at 17, drafting a running back at number 2, even if they're good players, and I think they both are, I think they're both excellent for what they are, I still think it's hard to justify when you consider how the league exists right now.
Well, and and going back to last year, because obviously that was the debate around here in New York, what do you do with two, what do you do with two? I know how I felt, and that was they got to go get a quarterback. I mean, they need to replace Eli Manning, and you've got this flood of really good quarterback prospects that you can choose from, led by Sam Darnold, who they pass on. He ends up with my team. I'm a Jet fan, so I'm ecstatic about it. So I agree with you about that, and that's where we get to six with Daniel Jones. I don't know what Daniel Jones is going to be. I know not a lot of people love him. He's a Duke quarterback. Other than Sonny Jurgensen, what Duke quarterback are we raving about? So I totally understand the skepticism around Daniel Jones. But to your point about positional value, if Dave Gettleman loves Daniel Jones, and clearly he did, full bloom, I think was the quote that he had, full bloom love, whatever the hell he said, then wouldn't you agree that it was the right decision to draft him at six? Because you need a quarterback, why mess around?
If you literally love him, then yes, I think you take him at six. I don't mind overdrafting a quarterback. That's not my issue with the Daniel Jones pick. It's more so just what I think Daniel Jones is going to be.
What do you think he's going to be?
I think at best he's an average NFL starter. I mean, I think Daniel Orlovsky from ESPN, who knows a lot more about quarterback play than I do, said this on the night of the draft. And he said, how many guys get better from college? How many guys, we watch them as a college quarterback and then they come to the NFL and they end up becoming a better version of the guy we saw when they were in college? It never happens. You never have guys averaging 6.5 yards per attempt in college and they come in, it's 8.0 in the league. So rarely. And I think that's the issue, is that you watch Daniel Jones at Duke, and I watched probably 4 or 5 games as I was preparing for the draft. And at no point during those 4 or 5 games did I think to myself, oh yeah, that's an NFL star. That's a quality NFL quarterback. There's just nothing about his game that jumps out to you. The one thing that I think you can say in his favor, maybe two things. One, he looks like a prototypical NFL quarterback. 6'5", 220, he checks all those boxes. Two, he has decent intermediate accuracy. He places the ball well in those areas of the field. That's really what Duke did on offense. There's RPO, play action. That's where they wanted to exploit you. But everything else in his game, everything that asked him to step outside of that offense, throwing the ball deep, all of that, it doesn't impress me. And I guess he's a little athletic. I mean, you're really straining yourself to come up with the reasons that he's worth a 6th overall pick.
We're talking to Robert Mays from The Ringer. Your thoughts on what the Jets did? I mean, this seems like a typical Mike Maccagnan draft in which he basically takes the best available player that seems to fall into his lap, whether it's Jamal Adams or Sam Darnold or Leonard Williams and now Quinnen Williams.
I think that's they wanted to move back, and I understand why they wanted to move back. It's the exact same thing that they did to the Colts did to them last year. When you already have your quarterback and you have a top 3 pick with quarterbacks on the board, you definitely don't want to be there. But as we saw, this quarterback class was a little different from last year's. There weren't teams willing to pay for these guys. And also, there just weren't as many teams in need of quarterbacks. I think that was the issue that drove last year's kind of demand as well, is that there were so many teams that were looking for their franchise guy. For the most part right now, teams are set. I mean, the teams that needed quarterbacks right away were – you probably could say the Cardinals weren't, but they did what they did, were probably the Giants and Washington, and they got their guys. So there was never going to be that frenzy for the number 3 pick. And if that's the case, then I think you take the best guy, and I think Quinnen Williams is probably the best guy.
You know, it's funny, based on what you said, because you're right, and I think we saw this coming, how right now in the NFL it seems like most teams either have their franchise quarterback or they think they have their franchise quarterback. Next year is going to be fascinating because there are highly rated quarterbacks that are going to be on the board. And it's so which teams this year are going to officially say, okay, blanket, we don't have our franchise quarterback. We've got to go find one. Because right now it seems like there's a quiet in the NFL where most teams think they have their guy.
Oh, I think next year you're going to see 5 or 6 come into the picture. I think next year is going to be ridiculous.
Tampa will be one of them, right? Who else? Like, who are the teams?
Who?
Tampa Bay, don't you think Tampa Bay would be one of them?
So Tampa Bay, right? Tampa Bay, Tennessee. I think that you can add Cincinnati to that list. I think you can probably add the Raiders to that list. I mean, next year is going to be fascinating. And now I think the team that is worth watching, because I almost feel for Josh Rosen because he could be in the same spot.
Yeah, Miami.
If the Dolphins are still really bad next year, like really bad, and they win three games, because they're trying to lose pretty actively right now.
Right.
If they have the number one pick and Tua is sitting there, why wouldn't they just draft Tua and let Josh Rosen kind of flail in the wind again? That's the whole point of trading for Josh Rosen at such a value, because you don't have to be committed to him based on what you invested in him. So I think next year is going to be maybe even more ridiculous than last year, when we just kind of see how many teams are saying, all right, we need to go get our guy. And again, I don't know if there's going to be enough quarterbacks to fill that demand.
And it's funny, though, because thinking about it, think about all the teams that you just mentioned. And I agree with most of them. Like, you're right. They all thought they had their guy. Tampa thought, oh, Jameis Winston's our guy. Cincinnati thought, Andy Dalton's our guy. Everybody thought, and Marcus Mariota, Tennessee thought they had their guy. And it's this cycle where you think you have your guy, and a few years later, all right, we're back into the wilderness. We got to start over and try to find our franchise quarterback again. It's this cycle that never ends.
That's true. But I think the biggest mistake you can make is committing to that guy beyond his rookie contract. I think that's when you really screw up.
Right.
So if you look at Tampa Bay and Tennessee, as long as you're not panicking and giving that guy a deal just because you're afraid of what comes next if you lose him, that's an okay decision to make. The issue is more so with a team like the Raiders. When you say, all right, this guy has won a couple games for us, he's the man, let's do this. They extended him early. And I think that's where you really make mistakes. So as long as you're just kind of playing out the rookie quarterback cycle, that's okay in my opinion. And we're going to see some fascinating decisions on that over the next couple of years here. Like, if you're the Rams, for example, or do you just sit there and say, when Goff's deal is up, maybe we can get somebody better? If you're the Bears with Trubisky, those are going to be the fascinating decisions. For the most part, I think the guys that were drafted in the last 3 or 4 years, teams have made the right decisions with sticking with them.
We're talking to Robert Mays of The Ringer. What was the biggest surprise from yesterday? And we saw Greedy Williams drop into the middle of the second round. Something jump out at you as a surprise from rounds 3 and 4 yesterday?
DK Metcalf was a guy that people really liked. I think Greedy Williams is a guy that people really liked. You know, there are some guys that I think that, you know, the teams did not abide by the Bill Belichick kind of, the Saints do the same thing. Like, their scouts are not allowed to come in and say, this is what I don't like about a guy. They have to come in and say, this is what he does well. Because that's the most important thing. It's about finding what their talents are and then figuring out a way to use them. And with Greedy Williams especially, again, that's just a lack of understanding of teams about how the game currently works. I think the way that this stuff still kind of dictates decision-making in a way that baffles me. You look at a corner and you say, well, he's not physical enough. He doesn't tackle well enough. Who cares? Why does that matter? It's like saying a 290-pound defensive tackle gets washed away in the run game a little too often. Okay, well, if he's pressuring the quarterback every other snap, then I'm fine with that. And Greedy Williams was considered by many guys to be the best cover corner in this draft, possibly. So that's the type of stuff where I still feel like the conventional wisdom has lagged behind what we really should value right now.
What do you think? Because this is a guy who I'm eyeing as a Jet fan, because I want to give Sam Darnold as many weapons as possible. Hakeem Butler, the big wide receiver out of Iowa State.
I understand why he's polarizing, but I still think he does a lot of things well. You know, with guys like that, that are that big, you worry about their change of direction. You worry, can they throttle down? Can they get in and out of breaks? And he did so much stuff in college where he was in the slot, and he's able to kind of move from there, and there's a little bit more just quickness-based routes. I really like some of the stuff he can do along the sideline. I understand that you look at a guy like that, you just see all legs, and for the most part, the league has gone away from those sorts of receivers. I mean, consider the type of guys we saw go high. You know, Hollywood Brown, Andy Isabella went pretty high. You know, that speedster from Georgia who hasn't even really played much receiver, you know, was a second-round pick. So I think most teams are kind of valuing different sorts of players at that spot now. But if you're a guy that can just play and can just get open, catch the ball, use that frame, then I think that there's still a lot of value in that. So I can understand why you'd want a guy like that for Donald. The Jets receiving corps is really interesting. I think they've done a good job of filling it out with useful players, but they don't have that just dominant, dynamic guy.
No. I think they're hoping Robbie Anderson can become that guy. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
He's very good. I like him a lot. But again, what's the ceiling?
Yeah, and that's the question.
They've done a good job of understanding that you need to diversify your skill set at those positions. Like, I think that Robbie Anderson and Quincy Enunwa are very good complements to each other. They do different things well. And I think that Le'Veon Bell obviously fits into that. But again, where is that overwhelming guy? I think San Francisco has done a similar job, where they have Marquise Goodwin, they have Dante Pettis, they just drafted Deep Samuel and Jalen Hurd. A lot of guys that do things that you like, But still, it's like, man, I wish we just had that monster that we could toss it up to whenever we wanted.
What did you think? Because both the Jets and Giants need pass rushers. They both addressed it in the third rounds. What did you think of Polite, who the Jets got out of Florida, and the defensive end the Giants took out of Old Dominion, Oshane Ximenes, I think is how you pronounce it.
I do not know the Old Dominion guy at all. This is, that's about the level of the draft where I start to fall off.
No, I understand. I get it.
Especially this year, I felt like I was even lazier than most years because we had a central draft writer at the Ringer.
Right.
So we really kind of got to lean on Danny for prospects as Kevin and I sat there and talked about more kind of not concrete ideas about how value in the league works, which actually works very well editorially, but it makes me less familiar with a lot of the back-end players.
Right.
I think Polite is fascinating because coming in, he's a guy I really liked from a tape perspective. I love with power.
Oh, there you are.
Because if you look at speed rushers in college and guys that just completely win with burst, sometimes they have a hard time translating because if you can't eventually turn that speed and the threat of that speed into power counter moves that allows you to attack an offensive tackle in a lot of different ways, they're just going to jump out and not let you get around the edge. So we've seen guys struggle with that before. Dee Ford early in his career was a perfect example. Polite just runs people over, and he had enough burst. So watching him kind of languish in the draft process was so interesting to me because I'm assuming there are some scouts that are sitting there in draft rooms and they're just like, I cannot, or during the course of the process, they're even watching him at the combine, they're hearing about his interviews and whatever, and they're just so frustrated because they want to love the guy, they want to bring him to decision makers and say, this guy can help us, and he made it hard for them. And that's why a guy with that much talent falls to the third round. So if you feel like you can kind of tap into the ability and kind of overlook everything else that's happened, I think that's where you can find value at times.
I mentioned this right before you came on. There's an over-under in Vegas on Daniel Jones starts this year at 7.5. Would you hit the over or the under?
I'd say the under because this situation is so different than a lot of others where we've seen the heir apparent be drafted in the top 10, the top 12, and we knew the future was coming. So think about how many times it's happened. Even if it's not the top 10 or 12, even if it's in the first 35 picks, where if you pick a guy there, you think he's your franchise quarterback. The guys in front of those players have always been so underwhelming. Think about the year where Teddy Bridgewater and Derek Carr went. It was Matt Schaub and Matt Castle were the guys in front of them at their respective spots. Mike Glennon was the starter in Chicago when Mitchell Trubisky was drafted. Sam Bradford was the starter in when Josh Rosen was drafted. They were never entrenched guys that the franchise had some sort of allegiance to. There was never a barrier to saying, all right, let's go with the kid because it's time. With Eli, that problem has persisted for more than 2 years. It's the same reason they've been hesitant to do this when they should have done it is just because of what he's been and everything else. They're not going to kick him to the curb before they feel it's necessary or very prudent. So I think that there's just going to be more of a reticence to doing with him than there have been with other guys.
Should be interesting. Robert, I appreciate you coming on. Enjoy day three of the NFL draft.
You too. I appreciate it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.